Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Celeste Freeman, who is the founder and editor of Witness LA and an award-winning freelance journalist specializing in gangs, law enforcement, criminal justice, and education policy. She is the author of G-Dog and the Homeboys and is working on a new book, An American Family, about the life of a parolee, his wife and kids during his first 4 years out of prison, based on her year-long LA Weekly series of the same name. Her work has been honored by the American Library Association, the LA Press Club, the Society of Professional Journalists, and Penn USA. Welcome to Background Briefing, Celeste Freeman.
Hi, Ian. It's great to be here.
And there's been something of a surprise here with Lee Baca, 15 years head of the world's, the nation's largest jail system.
And the nation's largest sheriff's department, and, and which polices a larger area than almost any law enforcement agency in the country.
And he is 71. He's stepping down. His rivals are nipping at his heels. But he's retiring under a cloud. And what is there a subtext here? Is there still a possibility that this federal investigation will extend to him? Or does his stepping down preempt that possibility?
Well, this is exactly the speculation that everyone's involved with right now. None of us knows for sure. And, last night there was some talk about, well, maybe there were some health problems, but that seems not to be the case at all. And the best speculation from people inside the department and people who know Baca is that it does definitely have something to do with federal investigation. What that is, is all just... we're all guessing. I mean, has he taken a deal? Does he not want to be Sheriff Corona from Orange County, who, of course, was indicted while in office? And does he know bad things are coming, that he might face indictments? Or is he hoping to make a deal, or feeling that he'll be less of a target? Or is it some variation on that theme that we haven't come up with?
Well, so far, the federal investigation has federal prosecutors have filed criminal charges against 18 current and former sheriff deputies accused of beating jail inmates and even visitors and obstructing
right.
the FBI and other crimes. And there's also investigations into corruption inside of, again, the nation's largest jail system. This has all happened on his watch. I've always
definitely,
gotten...
and there will be more indictments still to come. I mean, we're all but positive.
Right. But how long can you claim the piano player in the whorehouse defense?
Well, at some point you can't say, well, I didn't know. I mean, there's a point where it's no longer a sin of omission. It's a sin of commission, because to not know about a lot of the stuff that was going on either is just the most colossal incompetence, or it's deliberately looking the other way because for one reason or another you don't want to see it. And either direction you jump on that, or some combination of that, you don't have anything that's all that attractive. And where we saw corruption in the LAPD, it was... as one lieutenant said to me one time, well, we generally beat people up, but we don't take your wallet. And, fortunately, they're at least they're not beating people up quite as often as they used to. I mean, there's been a real change in the LAPD, but the kind of corruption we're seeing in the sheriff's department has all of that, with the brutality in the jails and the brutality that has made the department an absolute lawsuit factory in patrol. We also are seeing another kind of institutional corruption where there is an alleged pay-to-play system of promotions, where loyalty and a willingness to go along, to get along, and do what certain higher-ups, particularly whether you think it's the sheriff or the former undersheriff who is running for office to become the sheriff right now.
That's Paul Tanaka.
Paul Tanaka.
Who was actually in charge of the hands-on guy with all this brutality was happening, right? But now he's blaming everything on
the sheriff. They're now pointing at each other.
Right.
And I've never seen anything like it in more than 20 years of reporting on this sort of thing, is the number of people inside the department or recently retired, who came to us and I'm sure, a lot of other reporters who were working on this as informants. And I'd get these, daily emails saying, never thought I'd talk to a reporter, but I can't stay silent any longer because the people inside the department were so upset about the corruption that they were seeing. And that to me, I've never seen before. That's unique. That suggests a corruption that is more multi-level than the kind of police brutality that we saw with the LAPD in the days of the Rampart scandal.
Again, I'm speaking with Celeste Freeman, a founder and editor of Witness LA and an award-winning freelance journalist specializing in gangs, law enforcement, criminal justice, and education policy. She's the author of G-Dog and the Homeboys and is working on a new book, An American Family, about the life of a parolee, his wife, and kids during the first 4 years out of prison, based on her year-long LA Weekly series of the same name. Her work has been honored by the American Library Association, the LA Press Club, the Society of Professional Journalists, and Penn USA. So, Celeste, for the longest time, the sheriff's jail has been a pretty forbidding place, and
right.
They're unique, at least to my understanding, in as much as they train all deputies. All deputies who join the sheriffs have to spend the first, I think, 4 or 5 years in the prison system, where
right.
they get a very jaded view of humanity, and where it appears they're encouraged to exercise brutality. This seems to be a system that I don't know who came up with this idea, but isn't that a way to sort of brutalize people? And after 5 years of this, I should think when you come out, you have, as I mentioned, a pretty jaded view of humanity.
Well, and if you add to that a catastrophic failure of leadership to set an example for these young deputies who are coming out of the academy and presumably, come out with the idea, most of them, they want to protect and serve. And as you said, they're going into the jails where they're not, they're dealing with the people who are either accused of breaking laws or have been convicted of them. And if then the leadership inside the jails is saying, look, the only way you can get respect and to keep control is you have to be, you have to be tough, meaning, and, it's okay to use excessive force. And the step beyond that is we have had these deputy gangs inside the jails where one of them, were sporting tattoos and reportedly, we heard this from a commander of the jails, that in order to get your ink, so to speak, you had to break a bone. And these are the people who are sworn to protect and serve and, have badges and guns. So if that's the ethic they're learning inside the jails, then when they go out to patrol, it doesn't get any better when they're in a less protected situation. The jails are tough, but patrol is fluid. It's not a controlled situation. You don't have people behind bars, and you can't walk away. So, as a consequence, then we've seen these incidents in patrol where there are questionable shootings, and or just a general run-of-the-mill violation of people's civil rights that produces a tremendous distrust in the communities that the officers are supposed to be serving, and produces great harm and lots of lawsuits. And yet, at the same time, we have all these sources, and there are all these decent cops who just want to be good cops, and they're forced into this situation of having to go along and to get along, and they don't like it.
Yeah, but that kind of culture, if you will, where it comes from. The responsibility lies at the top, surely.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when you have the FBI weighing in, and apparently the sheriff's, and I imagine that the finger eventually gets pointed at Lee Barker, they resisted putting cameras in. I mean, that's pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well, the cameras were paid for. They were bought, and they sat in somebody's office. And, yeah, that speaks volumes of in terms of where your priorities are. And now the force statistics in the jails have come down in the last year. But it took a citizens commission, it took horrible press, and the existence of not one but two federal investigations inside the jails with, you know, and neither one of them's over yet in order to trigger that reform. There's no reason why that couldn't have been done earlier, and you know, a lot less harm it would have been done. And once again, that comes back to the decision of leadership.
And that commission that you mentioned was a Blue Ribbon Commission appointed by the Board of Supervisors to examine these allegations, and their report was absolutely devastating. So
it was, and one of the commissioners, Ian, was, I mean, these were not people who were naive. I mean, there were a number of federal judges and a chief of police, but one of the federal judges is Robert Bonner, who was the head of the DEA. So he's not exactly... you know, he's not your typical bleeding heart liberal. And by the end, he was so enraged. And he's run for law enforcement organizations himself, and he was just incredibly shocked at what he saw.
Well, just in the last minute, Celeste, Paul Tanaka, again, he's running. He's got some money behind him. How could he escape the taint if indeed he's not as dirty, or if that's the right word, as Lee Barker?
I'm not sure he can. You know, he's saying that he's the leadership that everyone needs, but there is a lot of suggestion that he'll end up indicted. You know, I don't know that, but you know that's something that certainly is being talked about. I mean, we'll have to see. You know, right now the highest ranking person that was indicted are two lieutenants, but we understand that there's a very good possibility that not only more indictments are coming, but they're coming soon.
Well, Celeste Freeman, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks, Ian. It was a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Celeste Freeman, who's the founder and editor of Witness LA, an award-winning freelance journalist specializing in gangs, law enforcement, criminal justice, and education policy. She's the author of G-Dog and the Homeboys and is working on a new book, An American Family, about the life of a parolee, his wife and kids, during his first 4 years out of prison, based on her year-long LA Weekly series of the same name. Her work has been honored by the American Library Association, the LA Press Club, the Society of Professional Journalists, and Penn U.S. Essay. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.